you need your team to want to work for you. And once you get that, then, you know, the rest is really easy. So I definitely think it's communication, keeping your eye on the prize of the brand, and ultimately your leadership skills need to keep your team happy and wanting to work for you.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 70 of the podcast. In this episode, we're joined by Pauline Patterson, who is an award-winning entrepreneur and beauty expert with over 25 years of experience in the hair and beauty industry. She's also an export champion, as appointed by the Department of Trade in the UK for her success in exporting globally. And today, Pauline helps other brands to build their export business. In 2013, alongside her husband, Johnny, Pauline launched her own brand, Dr. Pawpaw, which is a multi-purpose lip, skin and hair range that harnesses the power and benefits of pawpaw or papaya fruit and is suitable for the whole family. Dr. Pawpaw has become a globally regarded multi-award winning brand and is now available internationally in over 35 countries. A champion of giving back and sustainable clean beauty, Pauline manages production and new product development to ensure that Dr. Pawpaw is always improving and building on their core ethics, whilst also spreading her positivity and infectious enthusiasm by leading Dr. Pawpaw with the day-to-day management of a growing team. But before we get into this episode, please allow me just a few moments of your time to talk to you about Friendworks, who are sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Friendworks is a lead discovery tool that I've been using for a while now within my business. Its premise is very simple. Your professional networks are always changing. In fact, around 23% of your professional network could change roles every single year. And you probably realise that a large percentage of your business opportunities come from those networks. But how do you keep a tab on not only your own networks, but those of your entire business? You probably have silos within your business of people who do this monitoring very effectively. But I bet that work isn't standardised, and I bet that it happens infrequently. This means you could be missing out on lots of business opportunities. Friendworks helps to minimise this risk by monitoring your professional networks for you. As a friend, as a listener of this podcast, you can get a 5% discount on the cost of Friendworks by quoting code BenMorton5. And to quantify how Friendworks could help your business, they have a really cool lead calculator on their website, which you can check out at www.friend-works.com. But for now, let's get back to this episode and my conversation with Pauline Patterson, in which we covered a lot of ground. We spoke about what she learned from observing and working for other leaders and managers in the past, some of the good practices she aspired to follow and some of the things she wanted to avoid. We spoke about how her leadership style and approach has evolved over the past 9 years since founding Dr. Pawpaw with her husband, Johnny. And then we also spoke and chatted about what it's like and the challenges that come when you found a business with your partner, husband or wife. I know you're going to get massive value from this episode, folks. So without any further delay, please enjoy this week's episode and my conversation with Pauline Patterson. Pauline, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us today. First of all, how are you?
I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm really good, thank you. I'm good. It's my daughter's birthday today as we're recording. We're heading into half term soon, so it's all good. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm looking forward to half term, although hasn't it come around quick? From Christmas.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a sign of getting old, right? But more and more, I think, God, hasn't this year gone quickly already? And it feels like it. I don't know if it's a sign of hopefully coming out of COVID and kind of business getting busier and business picking up? I'm not sure. Or maybe it's the same every year. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, no, I definitely think we've hit the ground running this year. You know, thankfully, we weren't in another lockdown over Christmas, which I think we're all on tender hooks for that. So as soon as sort of, you know, January started, yeah, we've been really busy, which has been, you know, sort of good with all the shops staying open and all the events as well going back to being face to face. So, yeah, it definitely feels like we're back to normal and we've hit the ground running.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about business, I wonder if you can tell me or tell listeners the story of Dr. Pawpaw, kind of where the business came from, what led you to start it, and I guess what the business does.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, so at Dr. Pawpaw, we make a range of multitasking balms that are suitable for everybody. And we're most famous as a lip balm, but really we harness the power of the pawpaw fruit, which again, it's most commonly known as pawpaw fruit, which is where I'm from in Australia. But over here, you might call it papaya fruit. But yeah, it's a really amazing natural ingredient that has got a lot of the same properties as aloe vera. So if you think about all the usages of aloe vera, that's exactly the same result. And it's got the same vitamins and everything like that as aloe vera. So all our products have pawpaw, aloe vera and olive oil. So they really are suitable for sensitive skin, soothing skin and lots of other, you know, sort of different skin and beauty issues. And so, yeah, so how we started it was that our daughter actually got really bad eczema when she was a baby. And we tried everything on shelf. And it got to the point that the doctor was actually going to prescribe us steroid creams to put on her. And again, you know, being in the beauty industry, you know, Johnny's was in the hair and beauty industry. We just knew putting such harsh chemicals on such young, sensitive skin was a risk. You know, it was, even though the doctor, the GP was telling us, we just knew it was a risk. So we wanted to go down more of the natural route. So I had a balm that had used the pawpaw ingredient in it as well. And I tried that on her and literally it worked, you know, so well. We kept using it, you know, it eventually cleared up. And even now, to, you know, to this day, you know, if it ever comes back for my daughter, obviously we use our brand now, but it really does help to really soothe her eczema. So we tried to bring over some other brands, but they didn't want to export at the time as well. So me and Johnny kind of knew we wanted to do something because I was quite busy in my career with my corporate role working in London and trying to juggle having a child, and he was quite busy running his company as well and trying to juggle. So we were both full-time, you know, both customer facing, and it was really quite difficult. So we knew we wanted to do something that would give us the more flexibility and the choice to be able to not have to pay for wraparound, you know, daycare, you know, say from 7 a.m, say till 6 p.m. at night, which is when, you know, I used to leave Jasmine. So we started the product together. So we just started off again because we had a contract manufacturer. We briefed them. We launched the one product and the one SKU. And then it basically snowballed from there, really. When we first got the one product, our original balm, the Dr. Pawpaw original balm, which is the clear one that's in the yellow tube, we sent it out to loads of buyers that Johnny had through contacts. And the first one who picked it up was Harvey Nichols.
Wow.
And it just takes that one person, you know, to sort of to believe in you and believe in the product. And so they wanted it exclusively for the first 3 months. And we were like, yeah, that's an amazing platform. Like, we don't want to be exclusive forever. Because again, because of the knockbacks and the problems we had trying to get pawpaw balm, we really wanted to make it accessible to everybody. So we were never going to go down that exclusively at one place. We really wanted to be available to mass market. But again, being on that Harvey Nichols shelves then obviously snowboarded, and then we had proof of sales that then we could show to other retailers. And then we took it internationally as well by going to Cosmoprof shows, which again a big worldwide sort of beauty shows. And yeah, slowly it's just sort of snowboarded to, you know, it was just me and Johnny running it. And me particularly running it on maternity leave, pretending, you know, to not be on maternity leave. So now we've got a team of 15 and we're in over, you know, 35 countries. So, yeah, it's definitely been a journey.
So at the point when you sort of founded or had the idea of founding Dr. Pawpaw, were you sort of actively looking for a business to create? Did you consider yourself an entrepreneur at that point, or was it a sort of flash of inspiration moment where you thought, you know what, we can't get this, we're just gonna do it ourselves?
Yes, definitely. I mean, again, I still feel really shocked when somebody calls me an entrepreneur, because I know that that's some people's dreams, but I never considered myself that. Again, yes, I think because of our background, we thought it'd be much easier to bring in an already established brand, okay, and try and work with them in that respect. So we were probably looking more down that route. But I think what we definitely decided we wanted to do was we wanted to be our own bosses in some shape or form, so that, you know, if the kids were sick, I could, you know, look after them. If, you know, they needed picking up, you know, either me or Johnny could do it. I think what was in our mind that both our corporate 9-to-5 roles that sometimes obviously turned in from 8 till 7 p.m., you know, because it was customer facing, so you had to be available to the customers, certainly wasn't working and functional to be able to raise a young family. So I think we had it in our mind that we wanted to be our own bosses, to give us the choice and the freedom to work around.
Yeah. Here we go, going off piece slightly. And like, to what degree have you achieved that? And the reason I ask is, I think, like, kind of, I run my own business myself. I think sometimes, I notice this with friends, like sometimes when people look from the outside in at someone who's self-employed, runs their own business or whatever, they think, oh, it's amazing kind of when you work for yourself, you can do what you want kind of when you want. And just like, to what degree did those aspirations or dreams around the flexibility and kind of creating a better home life for you and Johnny and your daughter, like how has that panned out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely has, but you still end up working later, you know, than maybe if you did do a 9-to-5 job and, you know, right, I finish work at 5, I go home and I have nothing else to do or think about. I think that's probably the luxury that we've lost. You know, we don't just walk into the office, do our work, go home, and that's it. But so that's probably the luxury that we don't have. But where I feel like we have gained is, again, you know, I do the school run, you know, if not Johnny does, but, you know, we don't put our kids into childcare because this is just a choice, you know, that we wanted to make. Again, particularly in the primary years stage, you know, when we've only got them, you know, for so young before they will be teenagers and taking themselves off and not wanting to see you and not wanting to get out of the car. Can you park around the corner? I don't want anyone to see you dropping me off. You know, so we both made that, a real sort of, you know, a key thing that we wanted to be able to do. So if I do leave the office at, say, 2:30, or when I do, so I leave the office at 2:30, I go and pick up the kids, I bring them home, they've got my total, you know, attention. I give them a snack, give them dinner, do their homework, talk about their woes of the day, whatever else, and, you know, and put them to bed. But then I do get back onto my emails, you know, at 8 o'clock at night because I have to, because the world doesn't stop revolving. And particularly if there was an issue that was happening at 2 o'clock and, you know, it has to be resolved, I'd rather resolve at 8 o'clock rather than let it sort of all pile up the next day, because otherwise you can find yourself drowning if you do that. And again, you know, we're lucky because it is me and Johnny, then if I have a meeting, so sometimes I might not be able to do the school run, but then he will do it. So we always manage our diaries that one, you know, we're not in two separate meetings at the same time around school pickup. So that's always in the diary, who's not here if the other one is booked. So, and again, that's just the choice that we wanted, but it does mean you work more into the evening, or again, sometimes in the morning, you know, you get up a bit earlier and just do a few more emails before the school run or things like that.
Yeah. How easy or difficult do you find it to sort of put the laptop or the work phone down from 2:30 and give your daughter that undivided attention. Because I think whether you work for yourself or not, that's something that many senior leaders, people in senior roles, successful people struggle with, right? That being fully present in one thing and not getting into the situation where you're doing some homework with your son or daughter, but you're half kind of checking the messages on the phone. Like, how what's that look like for you, and how have you found it?
Yeah, I mean, again, because I've got two, I could still consider them both young. Again, like I said, my daughter's 10 and my son's 7. So when he's doing his maths homework, I have to help him. Do you know what I mean? And he's just learnt to read and write now fluently. But again, I have to listen to him reading. Do you know what I mean? I can't just let him read, because if he gets stuck on a word, you know, I have to be looking at it and sort of helping him do it. So I think at that stage, you have to be fully present as well. And, you know, my daughter sort of gets on with it a bit, especially with online things now. All her homework's online, but again, still with her, with her spelling, or sometimes, you know, she still asks for help. So, yeah, I just don't pick up my phone because I feel like I'm too busy anyway. I mean, you know, sometimes somebody might call me and go, oh, I need a quick question. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I can quickly answer that. But I certainly won't check my emails. After dinner, I might, if they're all sorted, you know, go on it, say, before they go to bed. But no, certainly from the time I pick them up to homework, to dinner, to snack, I'm pretty busy, I would say.
And Dr. Pawpaw is 10 or coming up for 10 years, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, 9. So we launched at the end of 2013. So, and that was the sort of the 3-month exclusivity. So 2014 was when we really sort of hit with other retailers other than Harvey Nichols.
Got you. So what would you say have been some of the, I guess, biggest challenges, maybe from a leadership and management perspective, and how have you adapted, and what did you learn from those?
Yeah, I think definitely keeping the team inspired and motivated, and I mean, basically just wanting to work for you, you know, I think really is an ongoing job and almost like a separate job to running the company again. And I definitely think, God, how times have changed since the pandemic as well, you know, and some people say for the good or for the worse, but we've definitely had to become more adaptable, I would say, definitely, and more understanding as well of our staff's needs. I always thought we were pretty good at being understanding before, because we have got working mums and we always did give them the option of part-time, which I was never offered at my company, even though I asked. You know, I wasn't allowed to do 5 days a week, but finish at 3 or 2 to go and pick up the kids, you know, or do 4 days and have a day off. So we've always been flexible with our working parents and with anybody that does want to do part-time versus full-time. But again, you know, this whole sort of working from home and also giving them that freedom has definitely challenged, I would say, our leadership skills, because it is a lot harder to manage people at home. And it's not because of distrust or anything. It's just the communication. I think, you know, in any leadership role, it's the communication, and you have to allow yourself or be available as well to that communication, so that, you know, you or we always make sure that we, you know, we have this whole, you know, open door policy. We're in an open office, you know, apart from meeting rooms. Me and Johnny aren't locked away in a, you know, a bigger office than, say, everybody else. So we're always visually available as well as being available. And definitely the challenge of having that communication with people all over in their own rooms with their own sort of, you know, issues in terms of their home life and what that looked like was definitely one of the biggest challenges. So I would say adapting to, you know, the things that have happened over that 9 years, because it was a very different world from when we first started. I mean, again, like I said, I was on maternity leave with our second child when I was dealing with Harvey Nichols and trying to talk to Boots and Superdrug. And I was literally in my pajamas working on my laptop with a young baby that I would stop. And people would ask me for calls and I'd be like, oh, no, sorry, you know, I'm too busy. Let's just do it on email, because I didn't want them to say, you know, see, or I mean, we weren't even doing video calling back then. But to even hear, you know, if Jackson started crying, you know, or something like that. So I had to hide it that it was just me. Whereas I think now, sort of people, you know, sort of love that and love to hear, you know, that people started things from their bedroom and things like that. But it was a much more judgmental, I would say, world back then to what it is now.
Yeah. And if you maybe compare and contrast the first couple of years of the business with where you are now, like, has your leadership kind of style and approach kind of changed? Like, how have you changed and grown throughout that period?
Yeah, definitely. As I said, we've always tried to be open and flexible with our staff's sort of wants and needs around work. But I'd say at the beginning, there was definitely a lot more face-to-face meetings. So, you know, we were probably stricter on, you know, you have to be there at this time. You have to be in London at this time. You know, if it runs over, it runs over, and, you know, sort of maybe giving them an hour here or there. But since then, we've had to become, you know, even more flexible and even more understanding of, again, other people's work-life balance. And again, some girls, you know, in the office are, you know, single, you know, in their 20s, or they're living with their boyfriends, you know, or they've got children, or whatever the circumstances are. We can't just automatically demand that they say stay in this meeting till 6 o'clock and cancel everything else if they have got something. So it is definitely more flexibility for their own desires, for their own work-life balance. So yeah, what I thought was flexible, I'm a lot more flexible now. And again, just that understanding. And if somebody's got a dentist appointment, or if somebody's got, you know, an urgent parent, is letting them go to do that. Because I do honestly believe that the more you let them go, the more they actually, like I said, actually want to work for you and will work for you. And we've had a lot of situations where somebody, say, has had to run off with an emergency, like dentist appointment, or, you know, there's been a grievance in the family and the mother's not coping very well, so they've had to go home, you know, to support her in that shock. And then you'll find that evening, they're actually on their emails at like 8, 9 o'clock going, oh, I didn't get to finish this, so I just want to finish this now. And I never asked them to do it, or would never demand them to do it. But you find that once you give, you actually get more back. So that's one thing that I've learned, as opposed to just, say, thinking the worst of people if they're maybe, you know, taking the piss out of you or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's so true, right? If someone's got one of those sort of emergencies, or not even emergency, just something in life, right, that you've got to deal with, and we're really strict and say, no, sorry, I don't really care. You're at work. I pay you to work. Get on with your work. Like, you certainly wouldn't get them kind of logging on in the evening to finish whatever they're doing. And actually, they're probably going to spend the rest of that day at work in a bad mood, grumpy, pissed off, whinging about you to anyone that will listen. So they're not going to be productive at work anyway. So it's complete, like false economy. Feels like the wrong thing to say, but like, it's pretty bad leadership, right? That's just never going to serve anyone well.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because they're going to be distracted anyway. Do you know what I mean? If somebody's got like a toothache or an earache, and you're like, no, you can go after work to get that, so they're going to be just, you know, sitting there in agony. They're not going to be able to. And the worst thing, isn't it, Ben, is if they make mistakes.
Yeah.
Then, because their mind's not on it. And then you spend more time correcting a mistake than if you just, they hadn't have made in the first place, yeah. You know.
And it's not really if they make a mistake, because it's almost certain that they probably will, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So it's really having that understanding for them.
So we touched then on, I think I mentioned kind of bad leadership or bad management. I know when we spoke previously, kind of you said you'd kind of yourself in the past experienced some really good leadership and some really bad leadership management, which is interesting, I think, because so often we learn some of our best lessons from the bad, right? We get really clear on, I don't want to be like that, or I don't want to make those people that work for me to feel like I did when I had that particular bad leader. What would you say are some of the good and bad things you've learned from watching other people?
Yeah, definitely. I think because I had a long career to showing my age in hairdressing, I saw all different styles. I mean, I was in the hairdressing business for over 25 years, so I saw lots of good and bad managers. And it was one thing that definitely, even when I became like assistant manager, I tried to change, but I was then still overridden by a good manager and then a bad manager as well, which was really difficult being that middle management. So when Absolutely Me and Johnny started our business, you know, we were both adamant that, right, what did we hate about the people, you know, the managers that we had that made us like not want to work, and let's absolutely, you know, strike them off and not do that. And I definitely think, you know, again, what I would consider a bad manager is somebody that isn't understanding to your situation and is that really sort of strict, almost like bullying, but, you know, just being really strict. No, you must do this. Work comes first. You know, the company comes first. You know, everything else has to fit around that. And really that kind of like, you know, drumming that in or pushing that in. And really, in the grand scheme of things, you know, sort of any business, unless we're doctors and nurses and actually saving lives, really isn't the be all and end all. Yeah. Again, you know, even if it is just about like money, and yes, it does give you your livelihood and things like that, and it pays for the food on our table and the, you know, the roofs over our head. But really, anything in business can wait. Again, particularly the industry I was in, with, you know, sort of like people's hair and then sort of training around that. So we weren't saving lives, you know. So to really put our job and the company's job above my own daughter, you know, or me, you know, the fact that I would sometimes race home to try and pick her up at 6 o'clock from childcare. And imagine if I just left her there, you know, because I was told that I had to stay in this meeting. You know, and what for? Just to listen in on this meeting, that absolutely there were other people there that could have done it. And that stress and that pressure that you're put under just because you have to sit there, you know, at a particular time, I find that really, really bad management. And it's just actually upsetting, you know, sort of for everybody in that. So I definitely think that strict, like we said, you must be there for the good of the business, you know, or else, you know, what's going to happen, really? A massive company, is it going to collapse if I leave a meeting half an hour early? You know, you'd want to hope they had a better structure than me leaving a meeting half an hour early, all of a sudden it's going to send them bankrupt. You know, it's just, it's that mentality of not understanding sort of, you know, people's lives. I think another key thing that used to really get me upset with some managers is, again, I use the expression when they used to dangle the carrot in front of me, but then never actually give it to me.
Yeah.
You know, have you heard of that? Like when they like, you know, oh, if you just do this, then you might get promoted. Or if you come in a bit earlier and, you know, do a bit later and do extra work, you know, you might get it. And then the promotions come round and there's always somebody else who gets it, somebody else who gets it. And I think that is literally so unmotivating and almost soul destroying, because you're literally like, I've done everything you asked and then some, and then you bring in somebody from the outside to replace me. Why? Because they've got more experience or whatever, but who could have, you know, more experience than you? It's that I literally have cried myself before from managers that have done that to me before, like literally crying as if it's like a breakup, you know, because you feel like you've put in everything and then, you know, that relationship's ended, or, you know, that position's gone. So I think dangling a carrot in front of staff and then never giving it to it is one of the worst motivational skills.
Yeah, that's such a powerful example, actually. One of the things I've become really clear on over the past few years is I don't actually believe it's a leader or manager's job to motivate anybody, because actually anybody that we recruit or promote is going to be pretty motivated, right? There's never really been anybody who's accepted a promotion or gone and joined a new company and they've been demotivated by that very fact. So everyone starts out kind of motivated. So really, I think it's our job to make sure people stay motivated. But more importantly, if we really keep deconstructing, I think it's to make sure we're not doing anything to demotivate people. And that's just a brilliant example, that constantly dangling the carrot that you never give them, or constantly moving the goalposts or saying, just do this and then you'll get why, and never actually giving it to them. It's just it's a really effective way to demotivate someone, is what it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's where, you know, all our promotions, you know, that we have had in the team have all been internal. You know, where we'll always advertise any promotions internally. And then if we find we can't fill it, we will go externally. But generally, all of the positions have been filled internally to be promoted, and then we've employed someone new underneath them to learn the role and grow. You know, and if it were ever to get to the stage that I think that we couldn't offer it internally, then I would definitely have that conversation, you know, with them before they even saw the job role externally. So, because again, I really do think, who knows that, who has more experience in the company than somebody who's already been here? You know, anybody that walks in, I truly believe nobody's an expert when they walk into their new role, no. But then they can become an expert. And, you know, so even if one of our team members is going for the promotion and maybe they haven't got all the experience, but we'd still have to train somebody new anyway. So, you know, and again, I think attitude is everything and you can't change that. And, you know, we're really fortunate that we have got, you know, an amazing team of 15 women and one man, but there's Johnny, so bless him, there's two of them. But yeah, a lot of them, all of them have been there since the beginning, and we've just grown and added to it, which, you know, is amazing that they've all been able to grow and do different roles maybe from when they started with us.
Yeah. Pauline, you've mentioned a few times that the business was founded by you and your husband, Johnny. Now, I think for some people, the idea of working and running a business with their partner probably sounds amazing. For others, it probably sounds horrendous. I'm not sure how well my wife and I would get on if we ran a business together. So that being the case, like, what advice would you share for anybody who's setting out to build or found a business with their other half?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think people either love it or hate it. And like I said, we did start off separately and then brought it together. But I definitely think that the key to the success is to definitely have your different job roles that are there. And the biggest word is compromise. You know, we can't stand in the middle of the office and have an argument. So there are areas that are definitely his priority and he's kind of like, say, the boss in, and then there are areas where it's my priority and I'm kind of like the boss in and say have the last word. So, and we kind of naturally sort of fitted into these two roles. So he really looks after obviously the PR and marketing side, because that was what he was doing beforehand and he fully understood that. And whilst I have got an understanding of it and have sort of had, you know, a say in some of it, like proofreading adverts and, you know, and things like that, and the general sort of feel of our brand ethos and how we are portrayed, you know, in social media and things like that. So we do work on that together, but ultimately that is his responsibility and he sort of has the last word in that. And that also then went into sales as well, because again, obviously when we started, we were both doing everything, you know, together, sales pitches together, you know, PR posts together, so social media posts together, you know, everything like that. So once it did get bigger, we kind of naturally sort of separated in terms of responsibilities, because basically one person just couldn't do it all, or two people just couldn't do it all. And so then I went down more of the route of the manufacturing. So I look after our, you know, our suppliers, the ingredients that are going in there, the packaging, you know, how it looks. Again, he still has a say on the names of the products, sometimes the colors that we're going for, you know, so he has that input. But ultimately, I look after all of the manufacturing, the shipping, the logistics. You know, it's not always the fun stuff, especially with everything that's going on with shipping, you know, sort of globally. But again, that's kind of like my area of it. And we do find sort of having, you know, that direct difference of responsibilities has definitely made it easier. You know, like I said, we still talk, we still attend some meetings together, like some buyers meetings together and things like that. So you have to have an understanding of what everyone does. Also, if he's off sick, at least I know what's going on. And if I'm off sick, again, vice versa. But I definitely think the plus side is because then we can share the kids' responsibilities as well. So like I said, if I'm working late, he can do the school pick-off. If he's obviously working late, then I do it. The football runs, the musical theatre, the after-school, you know, the nativity plays, you know, everything. We really are there for each other. So we are a team, both in and out of work. And again, that's what we offer our staff as well. We're like, you know, please, if there's a sports day, I want you to go. We'll just book the time off. We'll work around it, you know, I don't want you like missing out on your kids, you know, performance in the nativity or sports day or, you know, whatever it is, because we do have them for such a short time.
Yeah, amazing. Pauline, well, I understand you recently won an award, which isn't that easy to read out. I'm going to probably get this all mixed up. So it was the NatWest Every Woman Entrepreneur of the Year in the category for starting a business with kids under 12. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. Yes. It was just at another. It was the Aphrodite Award, which is the one that was for that. But oh my God, it was just, I couldn't believe it when I won. The competition was very hard. And there were so many inspirational women in that room, you know, both winners and finalists of the other categories as well. It was a real surprise.
I'd imagine starting a business with young children was probably pretty good training and preparation for homeschooling during the various lockdowns here in the UK, right? How was that experience for you?
Oh my God, well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? We found homeschooling really tough, and I don't think anything could have prepared us for what a roller coaster, you know, that was. And although, again, you know, we were trying to look at all the methods, you know, that everybody was saying on how to do homeschooling, it was just, you know, again, the downside of obviously me and Johnny working together with that is that, you know, we had to keep that roof over our heads. We had to keep food on the table. We had, I think at the time we had 8 or 9 staff who had the same thing. They had mortgages, they had kids, you know, they had food that they needed to buy. You know, I think there was only maybe 1 or 2 of our team members that lived at home. So everybody had responsibilities. And so we had to keep everybody working for that time. And it was really, really hard. Again, we did try and take it in turns. So say like I would do the morning shift and then Johnny would work in the mornings. And then in the afternoons, then I would try and work and then he would try and do the homeschooling, because again, we were literally given a sheet of paper and told to teach this to the kids, you know, and Jackson was at the crucial stage of just learning to read and write. So he couldn't do anything himself. We had to be there. Jasmine was able to read, but she still had a lot of questions on the work that they were trying to set out. So yeah, it was tough. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody to have to do. And also, the kids didn't want to do it. They were at home. That was like their sanction. That was like their time off place. They didn't get the concept of having to work. So we had battles. We had battles almost on a daily basis that, you know, just even trying to get them to do it. And, you know, I don't know if it really worked out, because although I was on the morning shift, I couldn't tell my customers or my suppliers that, you know, so they would call me in the afternoon or, you know, whatever, vice versa at the wrong times. And, you know, everybody was like desperate for work. So, you know, I would pick up a call then, you know, even if I was in the middle of reading a book with Jackson, or, you know, I would see my email ping and it was from a supplier that were waiting on something. And I would be like, oh, hang on, kids, you know. So work definitely took a priority. Then whether it's at the detriment of my kids, I don't know, but it was tough.
Yeah, I know it was my question, but I'm slightly regretting asking it now, because it's bringing back all sorts of memories that I don't really want to remember. But I will say, at the same time, to your point earlier, when during that whole homeschooling period, when I could really sort of be fully present and park work for a couple of hours and just be with my daughter doing some homeschooling, there was some wonderful moments in there, but generally, there was a huge degree of stress and anxiety that it created that I'm not really looking forward to ever going back to, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were lucky because we literally got our dog a week before lockdown, with the very first lockdown. So we were so lucky. And we had a garden as well, which, again, I consider ourselves really, really lucky. Again, we had quite good weather, didn't we, that first lockdown. Yeah. So, yeah, there were times when it was just like, do you know what, you just need to switch off, or, you know, particularly at the weekends, because thankfully our suppliers don't and our buyers don't work on Saturday and Sunday. And we were just spending all day together in the garden with the dog, or, you know, going for walks. And I really do believe we explored a lot more about Kent, you know, than what we had done, probably not doing that and having the dog as the excuse to go for a walk, or, you know, just walking you know, around and doing different walks. So yeah, that was incredible. But yeah, it's hard to remember those good times when it is clouded by the bad. It's weird how that works, isn't it? That the bad seems to be your first memory as opposed to the good.
Yeah, well, we've got, as humans, we have this negativity bias, right? So we can quite easily focus on the not so good stuff.
Yeah.
Pauline, a few quick fire questions to finish, if we may. The first one is, I think in the world of business, there's been a lot of talk over the past few years about marginal gains and incremental improvements, which I think has really been something that the business world has adopted from the world of sport. And I love that whole idea of tiny improvements, but personally I think it only works if we've got sort of the basics absolutely nailed down to start with. So I wonder, from your perspective, what would you consider to be perhaps three really critical basics that either you need to execute on brilliantly well as a leader or needs to be executed really well in your business?
I definitely think communication, you know, is one. And with all the emails, you know, and everything flying around, I think there's nothing like face-to-face communication. Like, again, particularly with the buyers, I think, you know, if somebody has a question and they just physically ask it, it's so much quicker to get a resolution or, you know, to get a solution. And again, that's something that, you know, we've always, sort of really strived on it, especially now that it's opening up. Now we're really trying to get face-to-face meetings back again, because I think that communication with that other human and just being able to read them and answer instantly is definitely a basic that we absolutely need for that. I do think flexibility as well, again, because like I've said, you know, you need your team to want to work for you. And once you get that, then, you know, the rest is really easy, because if they want to work for you and they're happy in their workplace, then they want to see, you know, the business grow. Again, as I said, a lot of our team have been there from the start. So they've seen us when we had one SKU or three SKUs and we were just in the UK. And now they've seen, you know, where we are globally. You know, we do try and take them out to, you know, different things. So different people have been to Bologna, different people have been to different shows, you know, so we do try and sort of do that. But it's really, you know, getting that team to want to work for you. And that is, I think, definitely down to leadership. Because you can't blame anybody else for that, except for you, or how you've handled something with that. And then I think the key is kind of keeping your eye on the prize, and, you know, not becoming too greedy, and keeping your eye on the prize. That yes, we are here to make money, but we want to do it in a kind and kind of new age feel, so that it's not just about, you know, business at the expense of everybody else, you know, without, and even with some of our buyers or even with some of our customers, you know, we want to be known as a brand that cares, and driving that successful message as well, which is also why we've gone into some charity work as well, with donating percentage of our sales to different charities, because we really want to, you know, to make that difference. And again, that also then goes back to making the team want to work for you, because they've seen the difference that we do. Yeah. So again, we're not just keeping it all for ourselves, you know, we're sharing it, and they've seen the difference that our products can make onto other people's lives and the charities that we've donated to. So I definitely think it's communication, keeping your eye on the prize of the brand and what you want to do. And ultimately, your leadership skills need to keep your team happy and wanting to work for you.
Cool. And if there's one item that you couldn't do without, or to put it another way, if it was lost or broken, you'd immediately go and replace it, what would that be?
I was going to say, because I've been asked what to take on a desert island, but it would have to be my phone. It would have to be my phone. It's how I communicate with my team. It's how I communicate with my customers, you know, with my kids, you know, soon enough, when Jasmine goes into year seven next year, or so in September, that's going to be the way I communicate with her. So, yeah, mine would have to be my phone.
It's the modern day Swiss Army knife, right?
Yeah, exactly. I could talk to my family in Australia on it. You know, they send me photos, I send them photos. You know, it really is a world in the palm of our hands. And again, you know, sort of without that, when we first started the business, it was a lot harder sort of to communicate. Thankfully, we had emails, but yeah, it was very different just having a phone as a phone and almost a laptop as a laptop. So yeah, it's definitely changed the way we can connect with everyone.
And what would you say is the one book that's had the greatest impact on you, or a book that you find yourself recommending to other people the most?
Oh, so I'm a bit of a spiritualist. So my book would have to be The Secret.
Ah, right, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever read it. Basically, it is about manifesting positive things to you. And I really do believe in the power of the mind and the power of like the spirit and people's energies and things like that. So, I mean, I'm not religious in the respect of don't believe that there's a higher being, but I do believe there's more to us than just our physical form. And I love The Secret. I listen to it sometimes when I'm down. I've got the Secret of Money on audiobook. Not being greedy, because when you listen to it, it's absolutely not about that. But if things are going, like we have a problem in the business, or, you know, sort of, you know, think things are falling flat, and I'm like, right, okay, no, stay positive, it's going to get better, you know, things like that. And certainly during the pandemic, I think that really helped, that kind of like higher purpose and manifesting good energy and manifesting good thoughts. I really do believe in that. So yeah, a bit of a spiritual book there.
Pauline, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been fascinating talking to you. I think the thing that really has come across is just how much you and the business kind of wants to do right, understands that everyone in your business is like a real human being with a life outside of work. And to your point earlier around wanting to keep your eye on the prize whilst also kind of running a business in a good ethical way that supports kind of the wider community as well. So thank you so much for your time and sharing the journey of Dr. Paul Poor so far. Happy 10th birthday for next year, and wishing you every success for the next 9 or 10. Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Ben. It's been fun chatting to you too.
So there you have it, folks, my conversation with Pauline Patterson. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got value from it. I certainly found her examples of how not to motivate people, or how we can so easily demotivate people through our actions, to be fascinating and just a really good, simple reminder of what to do and what not to do as leaders. I'd like to ask you a favour, if I may, as well. If you're getting value from the podcast, then please do head over to Apple Podcasts, scroll all the way down to the bottom of the show's page, and click on the rate and review button, and then give it a 5-star rating. That would be amazing. And leave a very short review. It really does help us grow the podcast and attract great guests onto the show for you to listen to and learn from. And also, please head over to my website, www.ben-morton.com, where you can sign up for my newsletter, my 10 for 10 leadership course, and you can make sure that you get each week's podcast delivered straight into your inbox so you don't miss a single episode. But for now, that's it for this week. That's it for this episode. I look forward to talking to you again next week. And until then, lead on.